My parents lived in New York City at the time, and I was home on winter break. And I was coming back to North Carolina, and I was riding a Greyhound bus. And something strange started to happen to me after I left New York. I mean, I was the same person when I got to Philadelphia that I was on 125th Street in New York. But it seemed as the further south I went, the more differently people started to view me. I hadn't changed. Boy, but they were changing. So by the time I got to Richmond, Virginia, and I was hungry, I went to a restaurant in the bus terminal and asked to be served. And they said, "We can't serve you here. You have to go around the corner there." And for me, that was the final blow of humiliation, that I had had enough. And I had made up my mind that I've got to do something.
Of course, I was Joseph's roommate. I was the mirror he bounced his ideas off of. Bing, 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 bing. All right, Junior Blair, wake up. Joe, what's going on, man? You know what happened to me? You know what happened to you? I came from Richmond, Virginia, man. By the time I got to Richmond, man, I felt like I was a slave, man. I said, "Well, Joe, you know, man, what can we do?" He said, "We got to do something, man. It's some sick and tired of race discrimination." So about a week or so, Frank, David, Joseph, and myself in the room, we said, "We got to make some plans. What are we going to do?" So time to act.
We were seen as different. And if you were to ask people about Joseph McNeil, Franklin McCain, Ezell Blair, and David Richmond in 1960, people would say, "You mean them?" Yes, them. Barov is kind of cuckoo, kind of crazy.
I was the one that didn't want to go down on Sunday night, January 31st, because I was worried about getting hurt. I went home and said, "Mom, Dad," I knew they were going to save me. "No, boy, your grades are failing. You better stay out of that." But they went along with Frank and Joe. You go down tomorrow, we say our blessings for you. "Oh, by the way, I want you to dress like you're going to church." "Mom, I want to wear overalls." "Who's your mother?" "You are. You do what I tell you." "Yes, Mom." "Okay." I said, "But suppose I get killed." She said, "You'll be dressed to kill." Uh-huh. Yeah. Mothers are always right.
When we had these sit-ins and we faced the prospect of being arrested and going to jail, we didn't know for how long it was going to be, whether we're going to go to jail for one day, or 1 week, or 6 months, or 1 year. We were students, but we were very serious students. We cared about life and our future, but we knew that we had to do this one stand. We had to take on this one thing. Good things started to happen early in that time when we were sitting down, and McCain tells a story about an elderly white woman who was in her 80s. And he and I were sitting there, and she comes and she sits next to McCain, and she looks at him and says, "Son, I'm disappointed in you." And he looks back at her and he says, "Ma'am, why would you be disappointed in me? You don't know me. I don't know you." And the little lady said, "I'm disappointed at you boys because it took you so long." The sit-ins was not about Frank McCain or Ezell Blair or Joe McNeil sitting down and having a cup of coffee next to a white person. It was much deeper than that. It was about choice. It was about having the ability to say, "I choose to sit down. Or I choose to drink from that water fountain. I don't choose white water or black water or colored water. I wanted water."
I was not angry at people in particular. I was angry at a system that I thought betrayed me. It was a farce. And I credit my three colleagues probably with saving my life. Because deep in my heart, I felt as though if that was what life had to offer, then I'm not so sure it's worth living.